Welcome to Lunar Crush Live. I'll just do a quick intro on Marcus. He sounds incredibly awesome. We're really excited to talk to him. He's the co-founder of XYO Network, 15 years of experience building, managing, and growing companies around the globe. We'll dive into all of that experience. But how are you doing today, Marcus?
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me, John.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things we're doing a little research on you before our discussion here today, and we were reading you mined your first Bitcoin in 2013. And my first question to you is, how long ago does that feel?
Wow, when you just said I'm working in the industry like or overall for like 15 years, I feel like wow, I'm getting old. And then
Right,
2013,
yeah.
like 10 years ago, you know, and I think it was about in April probably when we started that. So it is actually 10 years in the industry. So it's a long, long time. But how far have we come? Like it's crazy if you think about that.
It is. And I always try to think of an analogy. I'm like, has anything ever grown like this before? And I have a hard time comparing it. If you have a comparison, please let us know. But it's always it's interesting, right?
The adoption, if you look at it, you know, like 20% of Americans use crypto. You know, in 2018 when we started XYO, it was 2%, and it's like a rocket ship. You know, and of course, it gives these ups and downs, right? As we see right now, we have a little downtrend. It's maybe stabilized,
Yeah.
but overall, it's just amazing what has happened in the last 10, 15 years.
Well,
How
we'd
do you?
love to talk about the market a little bit, but tell us more about yourself to start. We'd love to know who is Marcus. What exactly got you into crypto? What was your journey before it, and what led you to where you are today?
Yeah, I'm a deep fake AI and
Okay. Yep. Good start.
I'm originally from Germany and it's always as always believed that the world is a place for all people and that the borders are in a way meaningless except to hold people off your yard, which doesn't make sense, right? And so I try to find ways to do business, even as a teenager, and do like global things. And I studied in Germany in a number of countries, and then lived in China and in the Middle East and Australia. Moved to a lot of places to like discover the world and worked and studied. And I got exposed to tech. About 15 years ago, and then went into online advertising and a lot of things, and I realized that all of these industries in tech are connected with data, and so we built an online advertising and data company. So eventually, I came to the US, and we built an online advertising and data company called Sterply, which we sold, and then a media publishing company, and so on, and from there we get like super excited about data. So we try to build a company which does distributed data as well as Bitcoin mining in 2013, and which was called NovaCore. And NovaCore, you know, did Bitcoin mining, but the price of Bitcoin was quite low then, obviously, and it wasn't as profitable as we wanted it to be compared with the other ventures we did. And so we took that Bitcoin mining network and did distributed computing problems for pharma companies and hedge funds. We did a big study, for example, with the University of Washington, where we did some cancer research, where, you know, you do a protein matching and whatever kind of thing. We 100x the computing power of the supercomputer. And that's the original promises of distributed and decentralized computing. That's what we did in 2013. And then we shut the company down in 2015, and because it didn't grow as much as we wanted it to be. And then I did other tech things here and there. And then 2018, we founded XYO.
Just a
And
general
is, sorry, Kavi, I keep cutting you off. Go for it.
no problem. How does 2013 crypto compare to now, today?
Yeah, most people So there's one similarity still. There's some people who believe like, you're cutting edge and you're very special to be part of crypto. And then there's the other side, which thinks you're falling for scams. And that was in 2013, the same as it's 2023. But today, more people have heard of crypto. You know, then it was much more education. You need to tell people what Bitcoin was and how it's useful, how it's going to change the world. And today, that's not as necessary anymore.
I remember those days. I got it in 2013 also, and everyone thought you were doing something illegal, and it was for you know, black hat hackers. You know, it was for people that were anarchists, and like the pushback was really interesting back then. But what's fascinating is that since that entire time, Bitcoin has just kept on running, same model, same everything. It just keeps chugging along as the world gets crazy. And on that note of the world getting crazy, I mean, I guess, how do you view the crypto market right here? I mean, we've gone through what seems to be kind of a phase of bank failures and things like that, but I'd probably say it's not over. But I guess, how do you view the crypto market right here?
Yeah, it's quite interesting that we have seen the recovery we have seen, I think, in the first quarter of 22, and especially considering where interest rates are and that you have full employment in the United States and in a lot of other countries around the world, you would expect that the Fed would tighten the screws a little bit more. You know, there's always a lag in monetary policy. So it might be that the two screw tightening was maybe too much, right? And that the crypto market and all other markets might get depressed more, and that we see other failures maybe in banking or other industries as part of that fallout. And so there is more uncertainty than usual, I think, in the crypto markets. You know, they could rally from here, and because we have seen a good launching point, we have a good momentum, I think, and we have the economy is set up in a quite resilient way, I think, global economy. But then we have high interest rates, and we have other micro factors, you know, which can counter the rise in crypto. So it's very difficult to predict, I think, what's going to happen, you know, and also how do the markets react if we have, let's say we have a light recession, right? What does that mean for the markets, right? Do the markets stay where they are? Do they go down 10%, 50%? Or do the markets, they predict, right, that the recession is light, and so they're forward looking, right, how markets are, and they will actually just brush it off and just keep rallying slowly, right? And it's really, really, really difficult to forecast right now, I think, for anyone.
It is. There's one interesting point. It's like, you know, we track millions of social posts every single day. We see every trend that's coming across every coin. Right. And, you know, if you kind of back up and see the things that have happened this year, you know, the biggest shock is that we're sitting here with Bitcoin at 30,000, Ethereum at 2,000. And, you know, you have politicians preaching the anti-crypto army, and you have regulatory uncertainty. You have all sorts of issues, but, you know, it sort of shows the resilience and the interest in this space. It's shocking, to be quite honest. It's pretty amazing.
I completely agree.
Yeah. So let's shift. Let's go forward. I want to talk about XYO. So tell us, what is XYO? What can users do with it? And fill us in on everything XYO.
Yeah, XYO gives you certainty around your data. It's self-sovereign data. We can tell you where your data comes from, and you know, it makes it auditable and connectable. And how we do that, we started as a location IoT company, and we realized location gets easily spoofed or hacked, right? You can download the GPS spoofing app and pretend that you are in Nairobi right now, but you're actually in San Francisco, let's say. And it's a problem for any second app on your phone, for self-driving cars and smart cities and so on. And so we developed a technology which gives you more certainty around location. We do this with IoT devices or mobile phones, which are IoT devices in a way, and they validate and verify each other's proximity through something we call about witness, which is like a cryptographic handshake. And that was 2018. And then we realized that we're good to provide certainty around that data, right? How about other IoT data, like temperature sensors, let's say, or offline, other offline data, like point of interest data, and generally generated data. And so we kept developing the technology and are now able to provide certainty around really any data. And that data certainty, right, allows you to, let's say, execute a smart contract through, like, let's say you take Web2 data, right, and connect it to a smart contract Web3, and then you know, it has some automation, let's say it pays someone one ETH, and if a certain condition is met, like, let's say your e-commerce package made it to your doorstep. And so today, the next iteration of that, like XYO 2.1, we just announced in the crazy roadmap for 2023, which showcases that technology, allows you to really take data from like Web2 type data and put it into Web3 type of environments and interconnect it and to commingle these technologies between Web2 and Web3. So make it super easy for companies to adopt it and to know where the data is, who made that and generated that data, and to basically create auditable data.
And is the data coming from the XYO organization, or is this developers integrating data into your platform?
Yeah, it's developers integrating data, and then we have nodes. So we are one of the largest blockchain networks out there. We have more than 5 million downloads of our nodes. And wow. Then in the beginning, we were very excited about IoT devices, which are very exciting, but it's difficult to get IoT companies to join you, right? When you're a small crypto company, they think in 2018, they thought you're Pablo Escobar. What do you want my IoT devices?
right. Yep.
And so we developed an app called Coin. And Coin is an augmented reality app, which lets you earn rewards as you explore the world. And the beginning, it was all passive. So it did these bond witnesses in the background, and you had a map, and you earned this coin in there, which you can exchange for XYO. And it was basically an easy way to get nodes and to get people exposed to XYO and crypto. And then we realized, wow, people are super excited about Coin. And so we added more and more features into the app. Right now, you do this offline data collection or location-based surveys and a lot of ways to collect data and then the data gets validated and verified through the XYO network, and then it gets connected to a smart contract that gets sold to companies, and the users get rewarded with the XYO, because you know all the components in the XYO network earn XYO as they provide data which is useful. And today our users use the app more than 3 hours a day in the foreground. You know, that's more usage than all social media apps getting combined usage. In the Android store, it has 4.7 star rating. In iOS, I think 4.5. Maybe our iOS developer isn't as good as our Android developer. and people are just super excited about it, because we managed to bring people who are non-crypto people natively into the crypto ecosystem. You know, before 2018, when we started, we wanted to make XYO attractive for crypto nerds like you and me. And the addressable market was very small. And so we realized that we need to bring more people in. And today, about 80% of the people who come into the Coin app are non-crypto people. And we have millions of them. And so we bring millions of people into the ecosystem. But 95% of the people redeem their coin inside the app for XYO. You can also redeem for like BTC and ETH and products like AirPods and other things. In the US and UK, you can participate in sweepstakes, and it's part of the decentralized infrastructure type movement. And so it's a way for us to get the data as well as bring people into the ecosystem and have a huge addressable market and so on.
When you look at node distribution, like which regions of the world are you seeing the most adoption?
Say that again.
I'm saying when you look at node distribution, like globally, where are you seeing the most adoption?
You said node distribution?
Yeah, like
node distribution. Oh, sorry, node distribution. So we're strongest in North America because that's where we started out. You know, our entities are based in the US, but we have a large community in the Philippines. We have a super large community in Nigeria. Western Europe is large for us, Australia, the UK, and we have these like viral effects sometimes, and then we use online advertising to educate people about Coin and XYO, and you know they download the app and get into our ecosystem, and then how we do it on the end is like we make fairly good amount of money. So we sell some of the data to companies, right? They pay us in USD, for example, on monthly invoices. I don't know, crypto company wants to talk about it, but that's happening. And then we take the USD or a portion of that USD, buy XYO into the market, right? And give it to the community. And then of course there are the crypto projects which work with us, which pay us in crypto. And so it really depends where there's a data need. There we do more advertising. Let's say we have a project in the Philippines, right? We get more Filipino users, or also where we have certain viral effects and people are interested in the app.
Actually, thank you for saying that. You know, a lot of our guests don't actually talk about how, you know, whatever X to earn, if you're just giving token away forever, is not sustainable.
Right.
So the fact that there's a cyclical revenue model that's part of this, that is Web 2 meets Web 3, I don't think that's talked about enough. You know, building sustainable ecosystems are very, very difficult and very important. And I think that's probably one of the biggest problems with this entire space. You've got, you know, 20,000+ coins that haven't solved that equation. I think that that's an interesting, what was that roadmap? What was that kind of journey like saying like we need a token, we're going to build this application, we're going to build this model. How did that all come together?
Yeah, in the beginning, we were as everybody else, right? We built our token and we have four components in the XYO network. There's a sentinels, which are devices which collect the data. And there's the bridges, which are devices which relay the data. There's the archivists, which store the data, and the diviner, which crunch the data to give you the best answer of a given data set to your question. And all these devices get rewarded with XYO. And it's, so if you have a question, right, you need to get some XYO in the market, you buy it, and then, you know, you reward the components, basically. And so you have a economy. And we wanted everyone to pay us in XYO, and it was just very difficult. We had a small network, and this was difficult to find people to use our ecosystem. And then we've tried to find a way to have a larger addressable market to bring more people in and to build something more sustainable. Like we had a big layoff in 2019. We lost half of our people just because, you know, the token tanked and our reserve suddenly was gone. And we thought like, oh, what are we going to do? And so we built this revenue model. We said, no. And some people in the crypto community think, you know, maybe we betrayed the crypto community because there's like blockchain maximalists, and they're great, right? Because they're very vocal, they do their part for our community, but it's difficult to build business models on some of them when you only are like super blockchain focused and say you can only touch blockchain and blockchain can't touch anything else. And you build these like insular ecosystems which don't touch the real world, and those models often become less useful. And so we said, okay, our technology needs to touch everything from like Web 2 to Web 3 and more people, crypto nerds and everything. And how do we do that? And this way we built a really, really great business. And And it's evident now we are the largest company in the US which tokenized the shares. We have more than 23,000 shareholders because in parallel with a token sale, we did something which is called a Regulation A offering, which is a crowdfunding on steroids, basically, and SEC regulated. And so we are qualified by the SEC to do this sale. And then we, in last year, we tokenized the shares in our company and listed them on the T0 ATS. It's an alternative trading system. For those who don't know, it's like in the US, for example, you have the national exchanges, which are the NYSE, NASDAQ, and so on. And then you have something new. It's called an alternative trading system. It's basically, it's a market with a bid and ask and, you know, like regular order book and everything, but you have less regulatory requirements and compliance requirements than when you go public with an S1. And so your ongoing compliance costs a year can be as low as $100,000. Depends on your company. For us, it's a little bit more, but it can be as low as $100,000 versus if you list on the NASDAQ, you have like $1 to $4 million in compliance costs at least, plus other requirements. And so we listed there to provide liquidity to our shareholders. And we were only able to do that because we have a sustainable business model. Right. And if you don't have those, right, then the shares might not have value, right, and nobody would trade them. Yeah.
So on one end, you're collecting that geospatial data, and I assume probably multiple different kinds of data points. And you take that data, and part of that goes, you have partners, it sounds like. And then the other part of it is you have a whole community that's building more applications into XYO's platform. Tell us more about that. Like what kind of things are you seeing built into XYO?
Yeah, so right now actually, so people, it's more about data collection. People collect data when they interact with XYO network. And then on the XYO 2.1 side, so it's a roadmap for this year, we have all these applications which are showcase applications for our technology, which we are releasing, which is crypto cards and live hash. Crypto cards is like a game working on XYO. Then there's live hash, which is an NFT identity type solution built on top of XYO. For every inventory, it's basically data storage for yourself, where you can prove that it's your data and you can share your data or parts of your data with whom you choose to share your data. And it's about data ownership and all these different things are being built on it. But on the new 2.1, it's currently us building. We have a huge community which is building, but on the new version of XYO, we are building this year.
And you're really focused on building that application layer and what the user experience is going to be. And you talked about onboarding. Yeah. And, you know, we've gone through 100 iterations of how to resonate with getting people like on-ramped into using an application. And it's like, I guess, how do you look at that? Because you've said a lot of things so far, like, you know, you've got this application, coin app that, people are signing up for, and that's almost, it's an introduction into crypto probably for a lot of people. Right. And, you know, like there's this whole concept of set up a wallet, store your passphrases, your private keys, all this stuff. Like it's still foreign to a lot of people. And I guess, how do you look at, you know, you're so focused on onboarding new users. I guess, how do you look at that layer?
It's very good. I love what you guys are doing in Luna Crush. You know, it looks amazing and very approachable. It looks like, cool, and you want to be part of it and easy, and that's the same thing we do on our side, right? We every step we think through how can we make it as easy as possible to my grandma to be part of it and to use this app. And to, like, if someone says like I'm a crypto nerd and I want free crypto, you know, we want them to be able to use the app. And if someone says, you know, I'm a Uber driver, let's say, and want to earn some money on the side, you know, I want them to be able to use the app. Or if someone is staying at home, right, and taking care of their kids, right, then I want those people to use the app. And all these different groups, right, how can we make it as easy as possible for them to use the Coin app and to become part of the community? And so we look and so and the same for XYO. And so we look at, we develop these features and we look at all the data points and we see where we get friction in the app. So for example, when in the beginning you earn just the XYO in the app, and that was just difficult for people to understand how to manage the wallets and to do everything. And so now inside the app, you earn coin, it's virtual points basically, which are tied to the dollar. And those you can exchange for XYO. And that XYO, in the beginning, you send to an ERC20 wallet, but then people had to set up their wallets and not everyone is comfortable with setting up a wallet. And then they need to understand gas fees. And they wonder, like, oh, where are my XYO? You know, I thought I'd get much more. And so now we have a partnership with Coinbase, for example, where you can redeem your XYO directly into your Coinbase account. And so basically, it's super easy. You download the Coin app, push a few buttons, you earn some coin, you get your XYO, you sign up for a Coinbase account, which is like signing up for, you know, a brokerage, easier than signing up for a brokerage account, maybe. And then you just use your email address you use for Coinbase and it automatically gets into your Coinbase account. And then in your Coinbase account, you can, you know, trade your XYO, buy more XYO, or do whatever you want there. And suddenly you're part of the community and part of this ecosystem, right? And suddenly you own, let's say you own even $1 worth of XYO, right? Suddenly it's like, you think about it, you follow the community, you wonder, it's like, okay, what's Bitcoin, what's Ether, you know, what are all these things, you know, what's Coinbase, what else can I do here? And and then they like, okay, wow, Luna Crush, you know, it's part of this ecosystem and I can trade better than on Coinbase maybe if I have all this input. And suddenly, you know, you get people educated and get them into the community. But it starts by making the first step, first onboarding step, as easy as possible to bring people into your ecosystem or the broader ecosystem.
And it's very straightforward to say and very difficult to do. And it's interesting, you know, at the last several conferences I've been to, everyone's talking about onboarding and user experience and how do we create a better ecosystem to retain users? And like, they're saying all these things, but then like, from a like a traditional UX perspective, like they're not even doing a user flow or wireframes or user testing or looking at analytics, or it's just a lot of verbal. And everything is yet still difficult to use for the most part across the ecosystem. Dare I say, show a new person how to set up a MetaMask and use it. You know, like it's, and they've done a lot, right? They've done a lot of effort to make MetaMask work. And I'm not picking on them because every wallet has a relatively similar experience.
Right.
It's difficult for most people. So I want to talk, let's move on a little bit, because you talked a lot about like this geolocation data, geospatial data. You must be way into the metaverse. And, you know, it seems like, you know, the last year or two here, we were talking a lot about it, and I don't even know how many metaverses there are, how many metaverse tokens there are, how many users there are that are actually using them. You know, I think it probably spiked and then kind of, or some things were never delivered. I'm just curious your perspective on the metaverse with this geolocation data. It's very interesting. So how do you see these two things merging?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the metaverse will also go through its waves, you know, like most technologies do, right? There's a lot of excitement and some realism, and then, you know, people build and things are going to be released, and then people are going to be awed. And, you know, it's the same with AI right now, I think, and it's going to be with the next one too. But the metaverse, I think, has so much mainstay. The metaverse, the best metaverses, so there's different metaverses. And there are the augmented reality type of metaverses, which overlay something over your real world, right? And then there are the deep metaverses, which can be on your phone or an AR glass or something like that. And then there are the deep metaverses like Sandbox and Meta's metaverse and everybody else's. And those ones you access maybe through your computer screen, but the idea is more sort of like virtual reality headsets. And a lot of these metaverses, the value in them is the land or the avatar you maybe can build or the things you own. And for you, for example, for your avatar in your metaverse to own the head you're wearing right now, right? You can say, for example, okay, if you own this hat in the real world, maybe your avatar should be able to wear the same hat. And so you need to be able to prove that you bought that hat, how much you paid for it, that it's limited edition, maybe, right? And that it has special features. And so it's connecting that Web2 data to your Web3 metaverse. And then also the best metaverses will be the ones which have some familiarity with our real world, right? Where you can say, okay, I want to meet with my friends in my living room and play Catan, you know, but my friends are in California and in Nairobi, right? And so how can I bring my friends into my living room? And the way to do that, right, is to be able to say, okay, this is, you have to map it somehow. And that's where we come in. We can say, okay, this is really the living room, right? Because you have some data points which enable you to show that living room and your street and your city and your country maybe or your continent and so on. And so basically how we play in is basically saying, okay, this data is correct and that gives you certain rights inside the metaverse, or it shows certain features. And we have the ability to collect a lot of the data, right? Because we have so many people collecting data, so we can say, go to a certain place, right? And collect data. We did that, for example, in New York City. Certain zip codes, we collected point of interest data where, a lot of people went with a coin app and took pictures of restaurants and wrote down their opening hours and did a lot of other things and overlaid that on XYO network. And then, we can, and then we sold the data, but you can also use the data to build the metaverse, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a really incredibly important discussion because, you mentioned AI, and it's interesting. If we were meeting 3 months ago talking about AI, we probably would have a totally different discussion today. And 3 months from now, we're gonna have a totally different discussion again. So, because you're welcome back for sure. But if you think about it, it's like, I can go and say, like, if I went to ChatGPT right now, and let's say it was hooked up to the internet, which it eventually will be, and I know that there's some other GPT solutions that are hooked up now. If I said, show me a restaurant in New York, or give me the best Thai food in New York or whatever, like, or if it's going to even show me information back, the question of is it true becomes such a big deal. I think that the search for truth becomes a really interesting topic when you're talking about, like, is it real or not? If you're in a metaverse, if you're running smart contracts with data, you want to make sure it's correct. So I guess, how do you ensure things are correct? How do you, like, especially when others are building into your ecosystem, how do you verify that it's right?
Yeah, it's specifically a problem for AI, right? Because you want to train it on the right data, but the right data is different for different people, right? If you look in the US, if you ask a Democrat one, well, you will get one answer, a Republican, you will get another answer, right? And they might, I'm generalizing here, but often, it seems like people live in two different realities. And so what's the right data to train the AI on? And how can you avoid that AI gets trained on wrong data and provides wrong details. And so the best answer for that is probably that you train AI on all the data, right? On all the data out there, but that you have to validate and verify that certain sensible data where you have a low amount of data set, let's say your hat of one, right? That you only have this one baseball hat, that you make sure that data is true and correct. And so if you have a small data set, it's very easy, right, to train the AI in the wrong way. And so if there's high value attached to something, for example, you have to make sure that the data is true and correct. You can do that with an expert network. Because you can show... Well,
you know what's super interesting about that is that, like, if you just look at where we're at today and everyone's mesmerized by ChatGPT, right? They're mesmerized by a text response. Uh-huh. Now what happens if that response is firing off a payment in a smart contract instead? And that's where the maturity level is like, oof, that's like 10 layers further. Sure. I mean, if you're firing off $1 million to someone, you had better make sure that data is right.
Yes.
You know, it's an interesting time for sure.
You're right. The more the world will be automated, you know, the more you will have nefarious actors trying to exploit that, right? And the more you have to make sure that that the value attached to that automation is safe and secure. Yeah.
Well, given that backdrop, you know, and your organization's playing a pretty big role in objective truth when it comes to data, I guess I'd ask how big do you see the opportunity is for XYO?
It's endless. Like, it's a $1 trillion industry. It's if you look, data and AI is everything. It's gonna power everything, and the interconnectivity of data from like Web 2 to Web 3, or real world to the metaverse, whatever, to the AI, and then from the AI informs anything from medical research to politics to like public opinion to anything, right? And the opportunities are limitless for correct data, and they're gonna explode over the next six months to 2-3 years, and it's gonna be crazy. It's nothing I've ever seen before. And so we are part of that revolution, making sure that this data is self-sovereign and auditable.
And in that lane,
no, go ahead, Kobe.
If we narrowed down to XYO, I mean, in the short term, like, where do you see you guys going with this?
Yeah, right now we are building, you know, the XYO 2.1, which allows you to have, as a developer, to have easier access to the tools. You know, we use Solidity and all the regular blockchain tools, but also, you know, Node.js and React and all the other things, you know, regular developers know. And so what we see is that, you know, we bring more and more developer communities into this ecosystem, which then will be able to utilize it for their own need. We don't know yet what that need is, right? It might be something I mentioned, right, that you prove that an item belongs to you and so you can use it in the metaverse. But it's probably something like totally mind-boggling. You know, when you remember when the cell phone came out, not the cell phone, when the smartphones came out, people were thinking like, okay, what do I do with it? Why do I need apps? You know, and then there were like 5 apps and probably 2 of them were shitty. And now you have like hundreds of thousands of apps with so many functions, and you think you need them all. And I think it's the same thing. If you think about data and AI, it's the opportunities that are just endless, and things will happen which you can't even imagine today in a very, very, very short period of time.
I mean, it is interesting though, when you talk through, like, as that gets stronger, it becomes more automated. It feeds upon itself. It needs to automate. And the only way to make that run, at some point there's payment involved and there's rules involved and there's smart contracts involved. And that's why it feels just like this natural flow of like AI and crypto are almost one and the same.
Yeah.
It may not feel it yet, but I feel like it's gonna.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. There are. If you think about I read about an interesting new study here, traffic flow, for example, where you don't need traffic lights anymore and your parking spots and so on. What you have the cars, basically self-driving cars, everybody sits in them, and then you have a big AI system managing the traffic, and your car negotiates in split seconds with another car, you know, it's a right-of-way, like, you know, I pay this, you pay that, and you have all these payments going back and forth, right? And then car maybe stops somewhere, and then, you know, the parking gets automatically paid, and then the car leaves, and someone else uses the car while you are at your ice cream shop, let's say, and so you increase the car utilization rates from, I think, 3 or 4%, it's right now, to like, you can go over 90% utilization rate of cars, so they're not as wasteful, and you have just a huge AI system together with a blockchain system managing all of that, and I think that's a dream, and that's one use case, you know. That's gonna be
it sounds like we're all gonna gain 400 pounds because we're not gonna have to do anything, we're just gonna sit there all day and it all just comes to us. So I hope there's AI for maintaining health as well.
AI is gonna invent some pills for us, which is gonna make us young and beautiful.
that no issue with that one. Just to switch gears, I know we're getting short on time, but like, you know, want to shift gears to community. You know, obviously launching anything new in this space is difficult. It's crowded. It's busy. I could tell you there's millions and millions of social posts every single day about all these different crypto-based projects. And that's just crypto. We're talking, there's so many more industries that we're competing with for a share of voice. I guess, how do you look at building community, building your brand, getting out there? What are some of the different strategies you use to kind of engage with your audience?
Yeah, I think this here is community building, John. Where, you know, we communicate and they understand us better and we allow them or the community to see what we are all about. And that's, I think, an important part. But then I think to be accessible is important, so that, you know, the Telegrams and Discords, so all these things, and offline, you go to a fair number of conferences like you do, and then also to understand your community. You know, is your community just, let's say, male, 25 to 45, you know, like the core crypto community, or do you have other people in that community, and how can you nurture that and make your community more diverse and broaden your community and your appeal, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. You said male 25 to 45 or something, or 20 to 45. It, you know, I think that's the general persona of a crypto conference attendee. And it's something that we look at too as well, because, you know, when you think about this from like an onboarding perspective and getting new faces into this space, it does require going outside of it. And I think that's something we talk about a lot internally. We're like, how do we connect with new audiences to not necessarily just bring them into crypto, but I mean, hey, you know what, if you own a dollar of Bitcoin, you start to look at it and you start to question economics and you start to look at the world differently, if you own a buck. So, you know, we look at this as like, how do we resonate with new people? And I think that's a challenge, right? Within this space right now.
Yeah. You're right. I love that you're doing that. I think it's so important. In 2018, it was worse. I thought it was you know, they were only men at crypto conferences. All the panels were only male and only white. And then, you know, the community started changing, you know, like proactively, I think people realized, you know, that this is wrong. And so panels today are more diverse. The crypto, the visitors are also more diverse, but not as diverse as the panels yet. You know, the lines at the men's bathroom at these conferences is still much, much longer than the women's line, which is unusual. Right? If you usually the women's line is longer. And so once we get equal lines, I think then we know we have hit better diversity. But I think it's definitely getting better. And I think part of the reason is that we have more adoption, but also one of the premises of blockchain is this decentralization, borderlessness, right? It doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter if you're white or black or rich or poor, or man, woman, or whatever gender you choose, or whatever, right? You can all be part of the community. And I think it's just super, super, super attractive. And I think as we educate more people that this is the case and what this is all about, right? It's a very, very, very attractive promise, I think. And this way, we bring a lot of people into the crypto and blockchain community. And then I think the bathroom lines will change.
Well, it sounds a lot like you just talked about. I saw in some of your materials, you talk about a sovereign cryptographic future. It sounds like you're sort of describing that in a way.
Yes, yes. You decide your own fate and the fate of your community, right? If you want to be part of it.
We have also seen like so many projects, layer ones, protocols, their relationship with their communities. Eventually, they talk about, you know, transitioning into DAOs. What is your take on DAOs?
I love DAOs. You know, I was involved in another crypto project, and we wanted to build a DAO, but they're scary. You know, I'm American and I'm based in the United States, and they don't give you legal protection. You know, in like Wyoming, for example, in the US, has a certain DAO law, right? So to give DAO some legal protection, DAO some legal protection, but federally, you don't have that. And so if you build a DAO, right, and you vote in a DAO, let's say you only vote, then already you participate and under certain regulators, the SEC in France sued DAOs, right, to say, and the people who just voted on the DAOs to say, like, okay, you were a contributor of whatever, and we sue you, right? And once a lawsuit comes, then, you know, it's like, it's crazy, crazy, crazy expensive, right? Most projects can't afford a lawsuit with SEC, right? If you look at Ripple and the SEC, Ripple spent more than $100 million, right, to get to the first instance of a summary judgment. They're not even there yet, right? And 6 years of brain power, right? Like Luna Crush can't afford that. You know, we can't afford that. I love DAOs. They're everything I want them to be, but we don't have the regulatory framework to be able to do them. Maybe if you are somewhere else, maybe if you're in Kenya, and maybe you can run DAOs with less risk, and that would be great, you know. But from the US perspective, it's difficult.
And it's even tough from a as regulatory compliant as you can be when you see what happens to Coinbase and to Kraken. You know, Kraken can't do earn, they can't do staking anymore. And Coinbase, that tried to dot every I and cross every T, still has legal issues. You know, it's like, it's a weird time yet again. Bitcoin's still at 30,000, and Ethereum's at 2,000. It just shows the interest in this space. Because going back to the beginning, I mean, you know, when you started in crypto, if Coinbase were to be sued by the SEC back then, it would be like lights out. It would be a big, big deal. Now it's like, yeah, whatever, we're going to fight it. And tough, who cares? We're going, let's do this for the whole industry.
So, yeah.
Interesting time. So, you know, I know we're out of time, but what do you want to leave us with today? What can the world look forward to from XYO and from your organization?
Join our Twitter and Discord and be part of it. Maybe download the Coin app and or hit me up on LinkedIn. You will be seeing how we unpackage 2023 and show the world something truly amazing over the next 12 months.
Thank you so much for your last hour of time here. It's been fun.
John Covey, thank you so much. It was really, really great.